Welcome to You Can Have What You Want with your host, Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. We're going to be talking today about happiness and specifically a new model of happiness I call the Happiness Matrix. If you want to get in and talk to us, we'll be taking your call starting a little bit later in the show. The numbers to call are 1-866-254-1579. That's toll-free, 1-866-254-1579. Or from outside the United States, you can reach us on 001-760-918-4300. I just wanted to begin today's show by exploring the two kinds of happiness, because when people talk about being happy, a lot of the confusion comes from the idea that there's this word called happiness and it means one thing. But if you even look at the dictionary definition of happiness, it says happiness or bliss, contentment, felicity implies an active or passive state of pleasure or pleasurable satisfaction, and that happiness results from the possession or attainment of what one considers good. In other words, the word happiness refers both to a state of pleasure, good feeling in the body, and the result of having what one considers good. Or if I was going to put it in another way, I would say that points to two different kinds of happiness, and a lot of the researchers will agree with this. There's a happiness characterized by feeling good, and I call that experiential happiness, that's sometimes called emotional happiness. And then there's a happiness characterized by feeling good about, and I call that attitudinal happiness. In some models, that's referred to as judgmental happiness. And, you know, there is also a proposal in some models that we talk about a judgmental happiness and a meaningful happiness, where we judge something as meaningful as if that's a separate thing. I include that in the sort of attitudinal happiness. So I just want to go through this a bit because I'm going to start to put these ideas together into a matrix that lets you maybe understand your emotions in a different way. So if we take the idea of experiential happiness, in its simplest form, people use happy as another word for the experience of pleasure. So good feelings in your body now. Sometimes people describe it as a lightness of being. Sometimes I hear people describe it as pure pleasure or a smile that overcomes you and just won't go away. So if I was going to define experiential happiness, I would define it as feeling good. So that's feeling ease and comfort in your body right now. If I was going to define experiential unhappiness, that would be feeling bad, feeling tension or stress or discomfort in your body right now. Now, what's common to both of the definitions are that they involve a set of physical sensations that are either happening or not happening right now. So the whole thing about experiential happiness is it's a part of your current experience. If I ask somebody, are you happy? I go, yeah, a lot of the time. They're not talking about experiential happiness because they're not experiencing it in that moment. Now, what they may be talking about is either the memory of the feeling or what I'm calling attitudinal happiness. Now, attitude is a word that has some, it's unfortunately become like a self-help catchphrase. You know, you just need to change your attitude. Your attitude determines your altitude. And it makes it sound almost like a meaningless word, but if you think back to the field of aeronautics where attitude comes from, attitude refers to the position of a missile or a spacecraft relative to a frame of reference. Another way of thinking about that is it's your angle of approach. So when you think about changing your attitude, you're literally changing your angle of approach, like changing the angle that a rocket is aimed at. And of course, if you change where that rocket is aimed at, well, that's absolutely going to change the results that you create. So attitudinal happiness doesn't necessarily equate with a body feeling. It equates with an attitude of mind. So this is the kind of happiness that people are referring to when they talk about, I'm really happy about that, or I'm really happy with this person or this situation or this idea. And generally speaking, you're going to feel good about, you're going to feel happy about anything that you think is going to benefit you in either the short term or the long term or both. And at an even more basic level, if you think something is good for you, you're going to tend to feel good about it. And if you think something's going to be bad for you, you'll tend to feel bad about it. And that's a lot of times when you're talking about happiness with people, they'll substitute the word happy for good and use them interchangeably. Like, oh, I feel happy about that. I'm really happy with that. I'm not happy about your attitude. Which is another way of saying, I don't feel good about your attitude, which is another way of saying, I don't think that your attitude, your angle of approach, is good for me. So one of the uniquely human abilities we all have is the ability to make ourselves feel good or bad about anything. And it just a really stark example of that is, you know, there are people on this planet who see 9/11 as a victory against the oppressors, even though most people listening to this show see it as an atrocity and feel bad about what happened. And it really does. You can do a little exercise if you want to just get a sense of that for yourself, is if you grab a copy of your local newspaper and you just chose the, when you start to think about all the different ways that those things can fit together, they form a sort of a matrix. Now, we're going to be taking your call starting in the next segment. If you want to get in, there's already a few people online. Just hang online. We will get to you. The numbers to call are 1-866-254-1579. It's toll-free. 1-866-254-1579. Or from outside the United States, 001-760-918-4300. So the happiness matrix is taking a look at what happens when we combine the two kinds of happiness. So true happiness, joy, contentment, peace, is not just feeling good in your body. It's when you feel good about feeling good. So it's like, not only do I feel good, but feeling good feels good for me. This is a good time for me to feel good. This is appropriate pleasure. Compassion, empathy, a sense of meaningfulness and satisfaction often come when we feel good about feeling bad. So we have bad feelings or uncomfortable feelings in our body, but we feel good about them because we think they mean something good. Yeah, I feel bad, but it's because I care so much about that person. I feel bad, but it shows that I really am empathizing with my friend. I feel bad. I mean, my body hurts, but it's great because I was working out so hard. And that's the feeling good about feeling bad. If you feel bad about feeling good, that's guilt and shame. It's like, I should not be feeling pleasure. This is a bad thing to feel pleasure about. I shouldn't be okay. This should not be okay. And that's the structure of guilt and of shame. And if you feel bad about feeling bad, that's depression. And sometimes even the extremes of panic. It's like, not only am I miserable, but I'm miserable that I'm miserable. And when you begin to understand the structure of these four things, feeling good about feeling good, feeling good about feeling bad, feeling bad about feeling good, and feeling bad about feeling bad, it gives you a lot more tools that you can use to begin to make changes in the way that you deal with your own emotions. So I'm going to be talking more about the happiness matrix throughout the show, but when we come back after the break, I want to start in with your calls, not just about being happy, though I'd love to talk about that, but also about having more of what you want in whatever area of your life. So the numbers to call to get in, 1-866-254-1579. It's toll-free, 1-866-254-1579. Or if you're calling from outside of the United States, you can get in on 001-760-918-4300. We'll be back with your calls and more about the happiness matrix and how you can feel good about feeling good right after this.
Welcome back to You Can Have What You Want with your host, Michael Neal.
Welcome back. Indeed, we are talking about the happiness matrix, but we're also talking about you, and we're talking about what you want and how you can have more of it. And we are going to begin talking with Michelle in Denver, Colorado. Michelle, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Well, I always worry about money.
Okay.
And
I feel like Dr. Phil. How's that working?
It's not working good. I want to stop.
Oh, okay.
I've always done it, though.
Okay. So here's the thing about worry. It's an interesting thing. I don't remember whether I've ever told this story on this show before, but years ago, I was doing a play in London called Extremities. You may have seen it. It was made into a movie years and years ago with Farrah Fawcett.
Yeah.
I was playing the rapist, and I was brought in at the last minute as a replacement because the guy who they'd originally cast actually went a little nuts and started attacking and threatening the other women in the cast. So they thought that's bad. But then he phoned the theater, and he threatened that he was going to jump up on stage during the show and attack the cast. Mm. Now, here's the thing. For those of you who know the play, my character spends the majority of the play tied up in a fireplace.
Mm-hmm.
So my mind is going, okay, first off, I've had like a week to learn this part and we're about to go on in front of hundreds of people. And there's this guy threatening to come and attack us, and I'm going to be tied up on stage. So I'm worrying. Now, at the same time as this is going on, I have a training coming up. And something that I've always done when I prepare for a training is I've always run through, before the training, once I've planned what I'm going to do and I have a rough sense, I go through everything that could possibly go wrong and figure out, okay, if this happens, this is what I'll do. If this happens, this is what I'll do. If this happens, this is what I'll do. And this was the first time where I was worrying and planning at the same time. Now, it was for two different things, but I suddenly noticed, oh, my God, this is the exact same activity in my mind. In other words, the only difference between my worrying about being attacked on stage and my planning for the training was in the planning, I thought about everything that could go wrong and came up with a solution for it until I couldn't come up with anything that I didn't think that I would be able to handle. When I was worrying, I'd come up with all the things that could go wrong, but I wouldn't solve any of them. I would just keep playing them on a repeated tape loop. So right. Does that fit with the way that you worry?
Well, it does, except for, I mean, maybe worry is not the right word. Maybe it's, well, no, I do worry and think about it. I do come up with those plans, you know, and that, but then it makes me worry more because it's like, well, I need to save so much, have so much in the bank.
Okay. So
and then when I don't reach that, you know.
So there's there's an old joke that I hope isn't as offensive as I think it probably is when I'm about to say it, about two women who are chatting in a bar, and one of the women is complaining about, you know, that she, you know, she keeps meeting the wrong guys, and she's going on and on about it, and finally her friend gets really fed up and says, look, the problem isn't that you're meeting the wrong guys, it's that you're sleeping with them. The problem isn't that you have worry thoughts in your head, it's that you're listening to them and giving them your attention.
Mm-hmm.
You're actually making your life somewhat about them.
You
know, as opposed to sort of this background noise. And the reason you're doing that probably is because they sound important.
Mm-hmm.
Gee, this is important. This must be really important. If you've been going through the same thoughts again and again and again, they're not important anymore.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the reason that we worry ourselves is because we think it's going to either keep us safe or motivate us to take action.
Right.
So if your worrying is actually getting you to do something different about your money, well, is it? Let's start there.
Well,
okay, that's a no.
No.
Okay. And has it motivated you, but beyond motivating you maybe to call me, has it really motivated you to do a lot of different things?
No, it just makes me worry more.
Okay.
Because I'm not.
Great. So it's not working.
Mm-mm.
All right. So this is the thing. This is how you know this is not a guy to sleep with. This is not a thought to engage with.
Right.
Is if it's not motivating you and it's not keeping you safe, it doesn't need to be there. Now, what actually keeps us safe is information and awareness of danger. In other words, if there was a real danger, your body would intuitively let you know that. And in fact, rather than being paralyzed with fright, you would be filled with an incredible energy. Not necessarily what most people would describe as pleasant.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's enough stories if you haven't had the experience of being in a genuine life-threatening situation that where people describe having this incredible strength, this incredible energy, this incredible clarity.
Okay.
That's fear. That's useful.
This just puts more pressure on me to do something about it.
Right. And the thing is, if it actually worked, then I would kind of go, okay, it's not my favorite way of motivating yourself, but, mm-hmm. you know, maybe hang on to it until you come up with a better one. The fact is, it doesn't even work.
And I do stop. You know, I'd like to do a lot of different things, go back to school, do whatever, but I stay in the same job because it pays bills.
Right. So look, there's a model that I like to use, which is cause-reaction-choice-effect. So we think about life as a cause-effect equation. You know, something happens and therefore we feel a certain way or we do a certain thing.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, there's a couple of steps between cause and effect. The first one is your reaction. And your reaction is your reaction. It's however you happen to be conditioned growing up. So you, like a lot of us, were conditioned that if there's a difference between the amount of money in the bank and the amount of money on the bill, the correct reaction is to panic or freak out or worry.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
So that's just your reaction. That's how you were conditioned. That's nothing to do with you. Okay. Now, the choice that you have that will ultimately create the effect of not only how much money you have in your life, but how you feel about the money you have in your life, so not just feeling good, but feeling good about, is what you choose to do once you have that worry reaction. So it's like, if you get to the point where you go, oh, oh my God, there's my bill. And, oh, there's the worry thought. There's the money panic. Now what? What you've been doing is you've been engaging with the money thought. You've been engaging with that worry thought, that panic thought. Okay, right, yes, I must work this out. I must figure this out. Right, I should do something. If instead you just chose, and I'm going to actually invite you to do this as an experiment for a week, you just chose to actually re-engage with, okay, this is my financial goal for myself. This is where in a calm, peaceful moment, I've sat down and I've gone, what's a worthy goal for me around money, a goal that I feel good about working towards? And so every time you have that thought, you recognize it. You go, oh, it's that guy that I'm not going to sleep with anymore. And then you refocus on, and this is what I want to create in my life. This is the amount of money. This is the kind of money. This is the kind of work that I want to make my life about. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's your homework.
Okay. All right.
Thanks for phoning in, Michelle.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Okay. We are going to go now to Erica in Fayetteville, Georgia. Erica, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hello there. What can I do for you today?
I had a question about money as well. I know the caller before me just called about the same thing. But I have a kind of a similar but a different issue with the money. It seems like when I make the money, it just somehow or something pops up that I need to waste all that money and I need to pay something and all the money just leaves as fast as it comes in.
Okay, so would it be okay with you to be rich?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. No questions asked. If I could wave my magic wand and...
No questions asked.
Okay, so then what do you think's going on there? In other words, if it's okay with you to be rich and you have money, where do you think it goes? In other words,
it just seems like there's different situations that pop up where I have to spend the money and I'm not able to hang on to it.
Okay, so it's like the curse of the money. It's like it's taken away from you.
Just when you get money,
something happens to the car and it needs to go in and stuff like that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let me ask you another question, slightly sideways. If you were going to sort of tell me your top three values in life, you know, the three categories of things that are most important to you, would money be in, would creating wealth be in those three?
Yes, it would.
Okay. So if you were going to do one thing different around money,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily something that's going to solve this once and for all, but something that just... maybe you've even thought about doing in the past, or it's occurred to you, and it's, what would be the one thing that you would do differently to really manifest that value of creating wealth in your life?
I guess I'm not sure. I think that's what I'm trying to figure out, is what I can do differently to change it.
Well, give me a couple of things that you could do. Just give me a couple of examples, even if you maybe decided or haven't thought about which one you would want to do.
Well, I guess,
you know, it might be
something
to do with the way that you spend. It might be something to do with the way that you budget. It might be something to do with the way that you earn. It might be
right.
something to do with the way you talk about it. What would it be? What could it be?
Maybe the way I budget.
Okay, so here's what I want you to do. We're going to take a little break. Can you hang out with me over the break?
Sure, of course.
Okay, so what I want you to do over the break is I want you to go to your heart, really tune into those good feelings that you can have inside you, and just ask yourself, what's a better way for me to take care of myself around money? One that's going to maximize my well-being now and in the future. And when we come back, I'm going to talk to you about that. You're going to let me know what that is.
Okay.
Okay. Right. Thanks, Erica. We will be right back with Erica. And if you'd like us to be right back with you as well, you can phone us on 1-866-254-1579. That's toll-free 1-866-254-1579. We're talking about the happiness matrix and wealth and having what you want. And we're talking with you right here on Hay House Radio.
Welcome back to You Can Have What You Want with your host, Michael Neal.
We are indeed back. We're talking about the happiness matrix, how you can feel good about feeling good, but we're also talking about anything that you want and how you can have more of it. Specifically, we're talking to Erica in Fayetteville, Georgia. So, Erica, welcome back.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, so what came up for you as you sort of just considered that question of how you could take better care of yourself around money? What came up for you?
Probably the budgeting aspect and not being organized with my money.
Okay, so what would be just one simple thing that you could do differently around budgeting that would just move you in a direction?
I'm not sure.
Well, okay. So, for example, let's see what you do now. Do you work off a budget?
No, I don't.
Okay, so that gives me a subtle clue. So how do you know, do you track your money? Do you know exactly how much? If I asked you, I'm not expecting you to tell me on air, but you could. But no, but how? If I was to ask you exactly how much money you had coming in and going out this month, would you be able to tell me within 5 minutes?
Well, that's the problem. Pretty much anything that comes in does go out, because there's always, if we do have some surplus at the end of the month or at the end of a quarter or something, it always seems to go somewhere. We always have an expense.
Okay, so here's what I'm going to... All right, I've got it.
Okay.
Darn it, we're going to fix this.
Okay.
So here's what I want you to do. You might want to take notes, or, of course, you can always listen back to the recording another time. Also, anyone listening, you can also go to geniuscatalyst.com, my website, and there is a video tip, a coffee cup coaching tip, called How to Spend Money, that also outlines this particular pattern. But here's what I want to show you is... First thing to do, and you can do this with your, did you say husband? Was it when you talked about a partner, or did I just hallucinate that?
I do have a husband.
Okay, so you can do this with your husband, you can do this on your own. It's probably useful if you can do it with him. Is to make a list of everything that you guys can imagine wanting or having to spend money on over the next few years.
Okay.
Now that could be a very long list, so take your time with it. And it's something fun if you're doing this, you know, in a couple, is you make your list, have him make his list, and don't compare till after. And just, there's sometimes interesting, you go, oh my God, that was on your list, or I didn't even think to put that on my list. But when you've got your list, then go through and make a chart on a piece of paper. So if you imagine taking a piece of paper and drawing a vertical line, lengthwise from top to bottom, right down the middle, and then you're going to draw, let's see, one, two, three horizontal lines. So you're going to basically divide it into four boxes vertically and two horizontally. Mm-hmm. So four rows, two columns. Okay. And the column on the left is going to be within a year.
Okay.
And the column on the right is going to be more than a year.
Okay.
And the top row is going to be A. And A is going to be bad things happen if we don't.
Okay.
The second row is B, and that's going to be good things happen if we do.
Okay.
The third row is C, and that's going to be, that would be nice. Or that would be fun. And then the fourth row is D, which you know, I'm going to regret this later.
Okay.
Okay. And then you take all the things on your list, and that's why it's really worth taking the time to create the list first. And you put them into the appropriate box, because everything on that list is going to fit into one of those eight boxes. And you're going to get to decide for yourself which things are actual bad things happen if I don't, and which things are, well, you know, good things happen if we do, but really, if we don't, honestly, nothing bad's actually going to happen.
Okay.
You know, or at least not for 20 years.
Okay.
Then when you look at where your money's going to go, your first priority is obviously that top left box. Bad things happen if we don't spend money on this within the year.
Okay.
So until you've taken care of that box, the rest of the stuff on your list, on the whole, should get as little of your money as is physically possible.
Okay.
Now, once you can take care of that, and if you're finding you simply can't take care of what's in that box, then you need to do something about income. But that's not where we started. So, you know, then you can start looking at the B's. In other words, what are some of the things where good things will happen if I do spend this money? And it may be saving, by the way, that goes in there. It may be putting money aside. It may be building up a surplus or a reservoir.
Okay.
Then when you've got A and B and you're comfortably beginning to cover those, then you can start looking at some of those that'd be nice things. And it's a model from coaching that we call integrity needs wants. The first thing is to get yourself into integrity in the sense that you've clarified what your values are and what matters. And that's that, just that process of being really clear about, okay, this is a need, this is a want. This is a bad things happen if I don't do it. This is, good things happen if I do.
Okay.
Then you take care of the needs, because if they're real needs, you have to take care of the needs.
Right.
And then you start to take care of the wants.
Okay.
And just that simple process, even the process of going through it together, will really make a tremendous difference. I've done that with enough couples to have seen it again and again and again. So you up for that?
Yes, sir. Yeah, definitely.
Fantastic. And as I always say, if you would, either phone back after you've done it or go on the forums at geniuscatalyst.com. There's an MNCT forum, which I frequent. And just let me know how it goes.
Okay, I sure will.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for phoning in. Let's go to Anisha in Reno. Anisha, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Thank you for taking my call.
It's a pleasure.
I have a question. My brother, everybody around me...
Could you speak up a bit, Anisha? I'm just having a little trouble hearing you. That's okay.
The men in my life I seem to have picked are all alcoholics.
Okay.
My grandfather, he died of an alcohol poisoning.
Okay.
My dad, my brother, and my husband, he's a functioning alcoholic.
Okay. So, look, before we go further, and we will go further, but I just want to jump in and say, I understand the idea that we pick our families from a sort of a metaphysical or spiritual point of view. I'm not convinced that that's the most useful framework.
Okay.
So, I see that you picked at least one of those guys.
Yes.
Okay, but let's move forward with knowing that you at least picked the one you married. Or
yes.
Let's hope you did.
Mm-hmm.
You live in Reno, so I mean, I don't know.
Yes, I do.
Okay, so given that, what's the question? What would you like to change? What would you like to do different? What would you like to understand?
I want to understand my lesson in this. I'm just not getting it. I have this, I'm trying to help my brother. I get sucked in helping him because I feel bad for my mom.
Mm-hmm.
She's carrying the brunt of the support, just trying to keep him alive. And now my brother's living with me. And as of 2 weeks now, he started drinking again and gambling all his paycheck. And for 3-4 months, he's been sober. Oh, I think he has. And I'm at this point where I'm so tired of it. I want to be happy. I want to run away from everybody, all of these people.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm going to ask you a strange question. Why don't you?
Yes, I don't really.
Okay. It's just good to know that for yourself.
I'd like to.
No, I get it. You'd like to escape from the pain or the what they call... There's a model in addiction called inescapable stress.
Mm-hmm.
That the reason that we're addicted to what we're addicted to is that there's a stress in our lives or a set of stresses in our lives that we feel nothing we can do will make it any better.
Yeah.
And so when we get to that point, we then go inside and go, since nothing I can do is going to make this any better, then I need to just numb myself to this. And the way that most people numb themselves to it is either with alcohol or with drugs or, depending on the person, with sex or with television or with food or gambling or whatever they've learned works to make them not notice the inescapable stress anymore. Now, the reality is that that inescapable stress is actually learned. It's not actually inescapable, but it creates a phenomenon that, again, psychologists call learned helplessness, where we've learned the idea that nothing we can do will make it any better. And they did this experiment originally with rats where they would electrify 4 squares in the bottom of a cage. And first they would electrify 1 square and the rat would go to the other 3. Then they'd electrify 2 squares and the rat would just go to the 2 that weren't. Then they'd electrify a 3rd square and the rat would stay in the 1 safe square. When they electrified the 4th square so that there was nowhere that the rat could go to escape the shock, to escape the pain, the rats would literally go mad. They'd start exhibiting. They'd crap right in the cage. They'd start spinning around, and they would die. Okay? That's what it's like. I don't know if it feels like that's exactly what it's like for you, but that's what it can be like when you're dealing with the sense of, God, I've tried everything I know to do, and nothing I can do is making any difference. Does that resonate with you?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you to do something similar to what I asked the last woman to do going into the break, because we're coming up on a break, which is just over the break. Stay with me over the break.
Okay.
But over the break, go to your heart. Put your hand over your heart. Breathe into your heart. And I want you to just think happy thoughts. You know, think until you can get a good feeling going in your body. And then when you do, just ask yourself, what can I do to take better care of myself right now? Okay? And when we come back, I want to not only hear your answer to that, but I'm going to make some specific suggestions of ways that you can move forward. Okay? We'll be right back after this.
1, 2,
Welcome back to You Can Have What You Want with your host, Michael Neal.
Welcome back indeed. We are talking about the Happiness Matrix. We're talking with Anisha, and I will be finishing this segment with a little visualization in feeling happy. But before we do that, let's get back to Anisha in Reno. Anisha, when you went to your heart, when you tuned in, you just asked yourself how you could take better care of yourself right now. What came up?
Well, I thought that I need to stop feeling guilty if I decide to do the tough love thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a right to lead my own life.
Right. And really what we're talking about here is, if I take it back to the analogy of this happiness matrix, is to go from, you know, feeling bad about feeling bad to feeling good about feeling bad. Mm-hmm. To find that place in you where you recognize, you know what? This isn't comfortable for me. This isn't pleasant for me. But I'm doing what I know to do, and I can feel good about that. Does that fit for you?
Yes.
Yeah. So here's the thing, is it's neat to understand. And the problem with understanding is really what we're saying when we want to understand something is we want a sense of clarity around it. We want a sense of ease around it. We don't want to have to keep batting this back and forth in our head and have this question running back and forth that goes, why me? Why is this happening to me? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So you can actually give yourself that by simply just asking a different question. So instead of why me, or, you know, what on earth can I do about this? But ask yourself questions both about your own well-being. Okay, given everything, remember cause, reaction, choice, effect I talked about earlier in the show? Given what's going on, the external things, the causes, given my reaction, which is that I go into this state of sort of learned helplessness and panic and frustration and hopelessness about it, where do I want to choose to go? What do I want to create in my life? And if what you want to create is a sense of well-being in yourself, a sense of happiness in yourself, and to feel like you're doing everything you know to do to make a difference in the people you love in your life's lives, you can do that. And it's just choosing and choosing and choosing. And I want to give you a very specific exercise, okay? So what I want you to do is I want you to just experiment over the next month with your brother. At what difference does it make with him if what you do is you love him unconditionally, as best you can, which means that you say to him, as best you can, my love for you is not dependent on your stopping drinking.
Okay.
And recognize his choices. As soon as you take it out trying to, because what we do, what we tend to do is we tend to sort of create a sense of guilt or shame and try and use that to influence people, try and use that to change the way that they feel. To the way that they act. We try and motivate them with our own approval and disapproval. And most people are so caught up in rebelling against that and pushing against that, that in a funny way, it keeps it in place. It keeps it going on. So when you let go of that and you go, you know what? My good feelings for you are not going to go up and down depending on how you behave. However, there are certain behaviors around which I'm not going to hang out, and there are certain things that you do around which I am going to be part of. And if you want to live here, this is the thing. I'm not going to love you any less, but I recognize the choices that you have, and I'm going to honor your ability and your strength and believe in your ability to make different choices and to create a different life. Does that make sense? And in fact, I think I'm going to have to hope that it does, because we've lost Anisha. So let me actually finish this segment with a little chemistry lesson around happy that relates to kind of the chemistry of addiction as well. But I'm actually a chemistry buff. My mother was a professor of organic chemistry, and I had a chemistry teacher who used to blow things up a lot in school. So I really liked chemistry. And when it comes to happiness, there's really two chemicals that we're interested in. And the first are endorphins. And these are your body's happy chemicals. And whenever you feel like a warm glow after sex, or the sweet feeling of looking at an extremely cute puppy or a baby or kitten, or even the release or the relaxation that you feel when you climb into a warm bath at the end of a hard day, then what you're feeling is the endorphins swimming through your bloodstream. And we're going to do a little exercise with that in a minute. The other chemicals you want to know about are adrenaline and cortisol, which are your body's stress chemicals. And they're the ones which go rampaging through your body when your heart's pounding after a near miss on the freeway, or, you know, the ones that make your vein throb in your forehead. When you learn to manage your own endorphins, to manage your own good feelings, to create that chemical release inside your body, you suddenly become a lot more independent of all these things that we think make us happy or make us unhappy. So I want to just give you a little exercise that you can do with that. And I'm going to do that in just a minute, but I think I've got Anisha back. So, Anisha, are you
yes,
back?
Back. I'm sorry.
That's no. Please, did you were you able to actually hear what I said, or did you fall away?
I totally cut myself off.
Okay. So what I'm going to ask you to do is I'm going to do the very quick version, and then you can go back and listen and hear the longer version. But the very quick version is just to recognize that what you can do mm-hmm. is you can choose to love him unconditionally, if that's what you choose to do. Okay. You can choose to believe in his ability to make different choices and create a different experience for himself, that he's not helpless, that he's not a victim, that he has that power within him as well. And what happens when you really allow that space? Now, that doesn't mean you have to do anything or put up with anything you don't want to do or put up with.
Okay.
It just means you're no longer going to try and control his behavior with your feelings. Does that make sense?
Yes and no.
Yes and no. Okay, you know what? I'm going to have to settle for yes and no.
Okay.
And hopefully the longer version of that will work. And by all means, if you experiment with that, if you're confused about that, phone back in. Okay? This isn't a one-shot deal necessarily. But the number one thing that I want to leave you with is take care of you first. Because if you're getting yourself into that kind of, I need to get out of here stress, then your ability to make a difference is just going to be diminished. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. So here's an experiment I want you to do at home. And it's just an experiment in recognizing how you can create good feelings inside yourself regardless of what's going on in your life, even if you're in a situation like Anisha's. And it's basically, I call it swimming with endorphins, or sometimes swimming with endolphins, because when I try to explain to my kids about endorphins, they somehow always hear endolphins, and they imagine these little dolphins swimming through their body. So if you'd like to feel good, feel better, feel happy now, and if it's okay with you to feel good, feel better, and feel happy now, what I want you to do is I want you to imagine that your body is filled with golden light. That can actually be whatever color you especially like, but just a light of any color that just brings a smile to your face when you see it. And see that light flowing through your body, flowing through your bloodstream, flowing through your endocrine system, flowing through every part of your body, pumped through your heart, nourishing every cell in your body, till your body becomes lighter and lighter and lighter. And maybe if you look closely, you'll even see little tiny endolphins swimming in the light. And each one of those little endolphins is a carrier of joy. And if you like, you can imagine yourself diving into that light, diving into the golden light or whatever color your light is, and swimming with the endolphins. And just do that for as long as it feels good. And you might find that over time, just thinking about swimming with your own endorphins begins to bring a wave of good feelings to your body and to your mind. If it helps, you can think about someone that you love, someone who loves you. You can remember a time when you felt good about feeling good, when you really enjoyed yourself, a time where you laughed, relaxed deeply. It doesn't matter what you think of, as long as it brings a gentle smile or a big grin to your face and a warm feeling somewhere in your body. And again, just let that good feeling grow wherever it is and spread it throughout your body. Just let it flow through your body from the top of your head down to the tips of your toes, through every part of your body, until you just feel better and better, lighter and lighter. It's usually a warm feeling that goes through your body, and you may feel it more in one area. It may be that your forehead feels better, feels more relaxed, feels happier than your cheeks, or your cheeks feel more relaxed and happier than your throat. Or maybe your throat feels more relaxed than your chest. Your chest feels better than your stomach feels even better than your legs feel even better than your toes, or maybe that tingle just spreads through your whole body. And that tingle, that warm feeling, that warm fuzzy feeling, is your body's own endorphin response. And it's something that with practice you can create in any situation, in any time, and it allows you to just come from a place of what I sometimes call background bliss, of good feeling, that actually leaves your brain clear to take appropriate action and to do things in the world. So rather than thinking about this as blissing out, this is blissing in, because this will actually help you get more in to whatever's going on in your life with more happiness, more clarity, and more well-being. If you want to know more about the kinds of things we've been talking about in today's show, you can go to my website, geniuscatalyst.com. You can subscribe to my free newsletter right there on the front page. There's also a lot of free resources and a lot of things that you can do there. You can also listen to this show and podcasts of past editions of this show. And I hope you'll join us again next week. Special thanks to Roberto, Joe, and Sonny back in the studio for keeping us on air for most of our hour. And a special thanks to you for being with me. Until next week, I'm Michael Neal. You've been listening to You Can Have What You Want.